to see Bob and Sandra, who have been friends of mine for about, I guess, 16 years. That's when I first met them when I moved to Hartsel. And since that time, I have pretty much pestered them to death, I guess, to be totally honest. But I have bumped into them again and again for obvious reasons, as many of you have. I remember I used to go down to Hansville when he was there. I'd drive from Hartsel down there to study Greek with him. And he used to laugh as I would pronounce my words, and he'd say, "David, you're a Southern Greek." And I really was. I guess I was stretching it to say I was any Greek at all. But anyway, it's so good to see them. I love them and just think the world of what they've done for me and for many of you and the good that they continue to do. I'm looking forward to this week for lots of reasons. I'm looking forward to renewing old friendships. I'm looking forward to eating, I'll just be honest. And I'm looking forward to studying the Word of God with you. I think that, as I heard a fellow say one time, people ought to review all along as to why they have meetings. If it's because, he said, it's that time of year again for us to have a meeting, and that's pretty much the primary reason, then maybe it'd be good to stop them for a while until you remember why we ought to have them. But I trust that's not why you're having it. That not just for that, but that you're having it because you realize the importance of coming together from time to time, reminding ourselves of who we are, of what we're to be about, and challenging each other. And don't ever doubt that when I preach, I recognize I have a great responsibility, not just in teaching, presenting the Word of God, but also in trying to live it myself. Because a preacher inevitably preaches to himself as he does to other people, if he's talking from God's Word. I want to talk with you, and I'm sure that the titles have been posted by now, but I want to talk with you about a lesson that I've not really known how to title it. I've called it, "If I Had to Do It All Over Again," "If I Had to Live My Life Again." But that's very redundant, "If I Had to Do It All Over Again." But you get the idea. Actually, the idea came from a survey that was done among 50 people who were over 90 years of age. A sociology department in a university asked these people, what would you do if you could just go back? If somehow someone were to grant you a second chance in life and you could just go back to the beginning, relatively speaking, and just live your life again, what would you do? And the answers they gave were interesting and yet maybe somewhat surprising, but not really. Answers that I think many of you might give now, might have given had you been in their shoes. And especially for people who are Bible believers, we understand that many of the answers they gave are answers that really speak to human needs. And the Bible reveals that better than any other book because it was written by the one who made us and knows us better than the others. So as we look at this list, and there are only three general categories I'm going to look at this morning with you, I want you to try to think in terms of, I've got my life now to live. Actually, I think the Bible is written for a number of reasons, but one of the reasons, and especially the Old Testament, is given for our learning so that we can live our lives now, so that when we get to the end of our lives, we can say we have as few regrets as possible. So as we go through this lesson, what if I had it all to do again? Then ask yourself, am I taking advantage of each one of these things? Am I thinking about these things? And if you haven't been, then begin doing it, and I'll begin doing it, and maybe we'll be better for the Lord and encourage our children, our families, and our friends and brethren to go to heaven and to be stronger. What would you do if you had it all to do again? The first thing that they said that they would do is that they would risk more. They wish they could have a second chance so that they could just take more chances. And again, that may sound kind of odd to some of you, but I'm just pretty sure that some of you understand what they mean by that. And certainly people of faith understand. You can go to the Bible and see example after example how faithful people were asked to take chances. Chances that really seem tremendous to them because it may have gone against all logic. I'm thinking right now of 1 Kings 17. and of the widow of Zarephath. You remember Elijah lived in Israel when it was very wicked, or at least the leadership was, and they had affected many others. Ahab and Jezebel were the king and queen of Israel, and you remember God had brought a drought on the land, more or less in punishment for their wickedness. And in that drought, God had sent Elijah, because Ahab was looking for him, sent him up to the region of Sidon to this widow. And the story goes that as Elijah approached this widow, she was picking up sticks, and he said, "Would you please give me a drink of water?" And she says, "Oh, yes." And she goes to get it. And while she's going, he says, "Oh, and would you get me some bread too?" And that's when I can almost see her turning around and kind of just almost breaking down. "Oh, sir, I can't do that. I can't do that. I only have a little bit of flour and a little oil, and I'm going to go home and make a little cake for me and my son, and then we're going to die. In fact, these sticks, that's what I'm going to use them for, is to kindle the fire to cook that cake. We're going to die. We have no more resources." And Elijah said, "Well, I understand. Do as you said, but first make me a little cake." I've often wondered if that widow might not have thought, "Is he listening to me?" "Make me a little cake, for the Lord has said, the oil will not run dry, nor will the flour be used up until it rains again on the earth." Did she have to risk? But just as Elijah said, as she did what he said, she would pour out that flour and pour out that oil, and she'd look and be just as much as was there before. And every time she'd go to make more bread, just as much. Well, that didn't make any sense. But she did as Elijah the prophet said by the word of the Lord, and what great blessing she received. One of the great things I think about Abraham, we usually think about Isaac, and we think about him going and rescuing Lot, and those were great acts of faith. But the very first thing God asked him to do, "Get away from your family into a land I will show you." And he went out in a very real sense, not knowing where he was going, not knowing a lot about the future. And God said, "Risk. Go." And he did. Let me ask you, would it have been safer for the widow not to have done that? Would it have been safer for the widow of Zarephath to have said, "Well, I'm going to kind of play it safe, and I'm going to keep my flour and my oil, and I'm just not going to do it"? She would have died, probably. Would it have been safer for Abraham to say, "Now, Lord, I'll go, but you tell me, now give me a little itinerary for the next year and a half, 2 years. Tell me exactly what's going to be happening." He may very well not have been the father of the faithful. And the Lord today, in 1996, requires of Christians to risk. But to risk, as we have said, by faith. In fact, 2 Corinthians 5 and verse 7 says, "For we must walk by faith," or we are to walk by faith, "and not by sight." That's one of the hardest things in the world for people to do. One of the reasons I don't like to fly on an airliner is because, well, one of the reasons is they don't give me a parachute when I get on. Have you ever noticed that? And made me uncomfortable the first time I got on. But not only that, you get on, you buckle in, and they're telling you what to do and to sit and be quiet and be safe, but they're flying the plane. And then when they take it off or take off the plane, I especially am nervous when we go through those clouds. You know how they whisk by the window? And I'm thinking, can he see up there? As a friend of mine told me, "Well, David, they've got all these sophisticated instruments. They can see all out there with that radar." And I said, "That's fine, but can they see out there?" And I think sometimes as we go through life, that's what we want. We want to see, but we can't see. And God has asked us to do some things that really, it's going to take a lot of faith. We all have our families. We all have our jobs. We all have responsibilities in the communities. We all have responsibilities attached to our jobs. We all have things we've got to do with our children. We've all got so many things to do, even down to working in our yard, and so many responsibilities. People of the world have them. We have them. But Christians will always understand that there's got to be a good chunk of our time spent on serving the Lord. He's got to come first in our thinking. And so we're going to have to provide time for other people. We're going to have to open our homes for young people to get together. We're going to have to invite people to come into our home to study. We're going to have to go into their home. We're going to have to volunteer to teach a class at church if we have any ability along that line. We're going to have to work to develop that ability. We're going to have to work to grow. We're going to have to reach to be elders and elders' wives. But I have known Christians that want to play it safe. Oh, they'll come and they'll give and they'll do some things. But I don't want to be radical about it, and please don't ask me to do too much. You know, I've got things, and I really think, and I've thought this way before, I don't want to miss out on this, and this, and this out here in the world by spending my time over here in active service to the Lord. And one of the strangest things occurs sometime when we're trying to make sure we're not cheated. You know who cheats us the most? Turn with me to 2 Corinthians 8 just a moment. I want to show you a passage there that I think is significant. 2 Corinthians chapter 8. I'm in 2 Corinthians chapter 8, beginning with verse 1, please. Verse 1. Moreover, brethren, we make known to you the grace of God bestowed on the churches of Macedonia, that in great trial of affliction, the abundance of their joy and their deep poverty abounded in the riches of their liberality. For I bear witness that according to their ability, yes, and beyond their ability, they were freely willing, imploring us with much urgency that we would receive the gift and the fellowship of the ministering to the saints. And this they did not as we had hoped, but first gave themselves to the Lord and then to us by the will of God. Now, if you look at the context, Paul and some others are gathering bounty from Christians to take to poor saints in Jerusalem. And he says of the churches of Macedonia, he said what? They gave, but they gave out of their deep poverty. These are the Holy Spirit's words. They were poor. And Paul, apparently, Paul had said, well, now you've done enough, or there's some indication. And they said, no, please. Take this. We implore you to take this. And Paul in verse 1 says, brethren, I want to just let you know something. I want to let you know about the grace of God that was shed on the churches of Macedonia. God was able to open up and pour spiritual blessings upon these people because they would open up. And sometimes because we are so protective and we pull in and we're so frightened, we come to the Lord with a little tin can and we say, just give us a barrel full of blessings. And he can't, because we will not let him. We're going to have to risk to be the kind of spiritual people that we want to be. We're going to have to open up and risk. And I don't mean carelessly and thoughtlessly and wildly. I mean by faith. And before we leave this, churches need to risk. You ever seen the evolution of a church? And I don't mean anything by that, it just except how some churches change. Sometimes a church will begin relatively small and they just feel like, well, we hadn't got much to lose. We're just going to give it everything we've got. And they study and they work and they teach. And you know what? They grow. Not always, but sometimes they grow. And they grow spiritually first and then numerically. And the church begins to get excited and they do more and more of what God asked them to do. But there comes a point to when a church reaches a certain size. Sometimes I've seen this occur. That they begin to look around and they begin to look at themselves and they begin to take note. And they say, well, just look at where we are. Who would have believed it that 20 years ago we would be here? And look at us. And things change. No longer is it a little small struggling group where they think, well, you know, we just have to depend on God and push forward the best we can. Begin to look at the bank account. Begin to look at the numbers. We sure don't want to go back to that little church. We want to be where we are. And so sometimes things are compromised. As things come into the church that need to be dealt with, sometimes they're not dealt with. A blind eye is turned to them. Discipline is overlooked. I had a fellow tell me once, I'm not making this up, that if we try to discipline these people, people will leave us. I'll tell you, whatever may or may not be said by that, that is not walking by faith. That's fact. I've heard of your good work in supporting the preaching of the gospel in Brazil and other places, and I'm thankful for that. We must remind ourselves of this to keep on keeping on, because we can change in our thinking, and we must not do that. We must not look at our bank account and our talent and all kinds of things and say, even the other way, well, we just can't do it. We don't have enough. We must reach out. We must do what God has told us to do. And I can guarantee you, that if we obey the Lord out of faith, and even if it appears that we are risking, we will grow spiritually. We might not grow numerically like we want to or we had hoped to, but we will grow spiritually. And brethren will be better prepared for heaven. Children will see better examples. And we won't have those regrets someday. There's a second thing that some of these elderly people said. If they had it to do all again, they would reflect more. They would reflect more on a number of things. I remember hearing Ed Harrell say a few years ago, well, several years ago after he'd been to India, he said that one of the charges they made against Americans, in fact, some degree, some of the checks, I got this impression from them as well, is that Americans are just a little bit fluffy. Well, how dare them say that about us? But that we don't think. That we just run here and there and run all over, and we don't sit down to think, because we think that when we're not moving, we're not doing anything worthwhile. That's not true. Some of the greatest things that have ever been done began by some calmness, some thought, some reflection. And we've got to reflect on the past. How many of y'all have heard the old adage, or maybe I should say how many have not heard the adage, that those that forget the past are destined to repeat it? That's true. That has been lived out a number of times in human history. But when you go to the Bible, you see this shown again and again. You remember studying Deuteronomy? I know you do. What is Deuteronomy? Moses saying to the people, basically, I can't go with you, but you're going over into the land. Now don't forget. Remember. Remember how God has been with you, how He brought you out of Egypt, how He bore you on eagle's wings. Remember how God brought you over. He fed you in the wilderness. He saved you from your enemies. Don't forget. We have great forgetters. You know that, so. One time when I lived in Hartsel, I used to run a lot. Ridiculously a lot. But I've gotten over that. Put on about 25 pounds too. But anyway, I ran all the time. I was out running on a road one time, beautiful little area outside of Hartsel, and I'd rounded a curve, and I had my headphones on, and I was just bebopping along, and I heard a noise, kind of a, and I thought it was static. So I hit it a couple of times. Then, you know, you turn your head to see if you can get better reception. And then all of a sudden it hit me. Car. I turned around and there was a car flying almost around a curve. And the first thought was, I'm going to be hit. So I start to go to my right and I turn and look, and he's adjusted to his right. Maybe it was to the left at first, then to the right. And I look back and I realize I'm going to have to just make a run for it. I go to the left and he's adjusted back to the left. And I jump for this ditch and that car's turning around and around, and I look and he misses me about that much. And I'm sitting in the ditch, staring at the ground, and I look up and that guy's at his steering wheel. He's staring at his steering wheel thinking, I've just killed somebody. So after a while, I got up and I went over and looked in. I think he was in worse shape than I was, frankly. I said, are you all right? He said, are you okay? And I said, yeah. And I thought he was going to collapse. Well, he drove on off and I started running again. I got about 50 feet and it occurred to me. Have you ever done that? It just occurred to me what had just happened. And I just dropped to the ground and I just prayed to God and I just thanked Him and I told Him I was going to do this and that and I would never forget that, and I was not going to do this anymore and I wasn't going to be. Didn't take very long though for me to forget some of that. That's who we are. That's who we are. We're human beings. And we need to be reminded. And our children need to be reminded. And not only that, my brothers and sisters, our children need not only to be told these stories, but how can they apply them to their lives? Because children have more difficulty making application sometime than we do, or supposed to. We're supposed to be able to make application through reflection. We need to remember. Remember why our marriage went through a hard time. Remember why we got into the sin that we got into the last time we got into it. I had a girl tell me one time, she said, I'm going to go down to a particular city on the coast and I'm going to go into certain places that I never used to could resist and I just want to see how strong I am now spiritually. I said, oh, please don't do that. Satan's going to do a good enough job tempting you without you helping him. Besides, you're supposed to remember that those places are the things that brought you down before and to get away from them. I dare say everybody here knows the weaknesses or weakness that you have. You know what you struggle with. God knows. Analyze it. What brings you into this problem? What gets you into this? And get away from those things. Reflect on the past, but don't live in the past. We've got to reflect at the present. Those that forget the past are destined to repeat it. There's no time like the present. I've known of many Christians, and I know that as we get older, that we are more and more limited for health reasons, all kinds of reasons. God knows that. But God knows what we can do too. And I've seen people that are so intent on looking back, and though I respect the great things they did in the past, we can't save up great acts of faith like we can money. Doesn't work that way. We must look back and be thankful that God has seen us through a number of things to learn from the past, but don't live in the past because it will affect the present and the future. Have you ever noticed in the Bible how much is said about now and today? Have you ever noticed that? One time I got the Bible out and I just started looking at how many passages emphasize today. I think about Deuteronomy 7 verse 11 where Moses said, you are to learn these commandments and keep these commandments and teach today. I think about later Joshua in Joshua 24 verse 15 told the children of Israel, the elders and the children, he said, make a choice today. Whether you're going to serve the gods or serve the Lord, I, my family and I, are going to serve the Lord. But today is the time to make that choice. 2 Corinthians 6 verse 2. Now is the accepted time. Behold, today is a day of salvation. Hebrews 3 and verse 13. Exhort one another daily while it is called today. You find somebody that really is sharp. Somebody that just knows a lot about a lot. Or somebody who's got a good understanding of the Scriptures. That's somebody that realized the time to learn was today. Not the person that said, well, I'm going to study my Bible when I get my job pretty much under control and when I got my house just like I like it and when my kids get up and get on and, oh, I'm going to be a spiritual giant then. They are people that recognize the importance of acting today and then whenever you have the next day and the next day and it accumulates. Acting today, it may sound corny to you, but you only have now. We just had a woman at Helton, a lovely person, an elderly person, good health, just looked great. She had a stroke, and in about 2.5-3 weeks, she's gone. There's no indication of that. I'm thankful to say she understood the importance of acting today. And you know what? That's how a good name's built. Popularity comes and it goes. But a good name comes from people doing things each day, understanding the importance of kind acts, good deeds, of being truly a servant of the Lord. There was a singing group several years ago that my kids liked. It was pretty much for younger teenagers, But I remember saying to my children at the time, I said, you know, this group is just phenomenally popular right now, but there may come a day when you won't, nobody will remember their name. Of course, they laughed at me, oh, Dad, yeah, you're right. You're crazy. You know, if I were to mention their names now, many of you wouldn't know who they are. Some because you didn't like them to begin with and didn't pay attention. But others because you're too young to remember them. It's incredible. But a good name comes from living every day. Not perfect. But when you make mistakes, make that right and move to the next day. Every day living for that day. Sufficient unto the day is the evil thereof, Jesus once said. And then speak. We need to reflect about that some. And I want to ask you to do that for just a minute. It is my contention that too often we as Christians don't tell one another how we feel. And I'm not talking about being maudlin or silly. I'm talking about being genuine. Speak today. Do you remember that old Bear Bryant commercial? Now, I'm not just trying to make an Alabama statement here. It's just a commercial. Do you remember it? Where he'd pick up the telephone, he'd say, have you called your mother today? I sure wish I could call mine. There's too much silence beyond the grave. Way too much. And there have been friends of mine that are no longer here anymore. And I tell you, I think back, I think, why didn't I go to him or to her? And why didn't I say, I just think the world of you. You're one of the reasons that I love the Lord. You're one of the reasons that I'm trying to keep on keeping on. And people say, well, I'm just not like that. I'm just not like that. Well, brethren, we ought to get like that. That's what I'm saying. Because I believe with all my heart that you see that in the Scriptures. Paul prayed for Timothy and Titus and Philemon and churches, and he told them he did. And I think we ought to too. Again, not in a showy way, but because we thought about it, because we genuinely feel it. And then, of course, we must think into the future. The past we must learn from, the present we must live in, but the Bible teaches us again and again that we can't just drift aimlessly, that we are to set our affections on things above. In fact, the Apostle Paul talked about in Philippians chapter 3 that he continued to stretch and to reach forward. Yes, today he did that. But as he thought about his reward and as he thought about the future, it's important for us to think about the future because heaven's out there. You know, I was listening to a lesson one time years ago. And a particular preacher said that one of the things he had done, and at the time I thought it was a little corny, but the more I thought about it, the more I thought, you know, maybe that's not so corny. He said, I want to ask each of you to sit down and write the reasons down why you want to go to heaven. Why do you want to go to heaven? I want to go to heaven so I don't have to see anybody else die. I want to go to heaven so I can see, and I freely admit, I don't understand exactly what it's going to be like in heaven in regard to me knowing people that have gone on before. How will I know them? What will the relationship exactly be? I don't know. But I'll tell you this. David one time said about that child that had died through the sin with Bathsheba. He said, he cannot come back to me, but I can go to him. And I sure would like to see Brother A.C. Moore. I'd like to see Brother and Sister Jacks. I'd like to be with people like that. I'd like to go to a place where when you're there, victory. You talk about a national championship, that's nothing. That's nothing. You talk about winning some award or getting a new, that is nothing. Going to a place where there's no more devil, no more temptation, no more sin, no more chance that I can be taken away from God. Write that down. Put it somewhere where you'll see it every day. On the mirror where you brush your teeth. In the sock drawer where you get your socks. Well, you see it every day. And even if you don't read it every day, there it is before you. Remember. Reflect. The final thing these individuals said, if they had it to do again, is they would want to do more things that will live on after them. And I want to suggest to you that that's really true. Psychologists tell us that you will reach an age eventually where you look back on your life and you'll begin to wonder, what have I done? What does it mean? Will I be remembered? How will I be remembered? And I want to just to urge you now to stop and think. As I mentioned a while ago, I enjoy football. In fact, sometimes I enjoy it too much. I enjoy building things. I enjoy doing things in this life, fishing. But I guarantee you this, there's going to come a time when it will simply not matter to you who won the Iron Bowl in 1977. It won't matter at all. I mean, you may not can imagine that now, but there'll come a time where it won't matter. It may be right near the end. There'll come a time where it won't matter whether you get all that new furniture you want. There'll come a time when some of the things of this earth are just going to begin to let loose, little by little. They're going to let go because your life is waning. And inside of you, the spiritual man is going to be saying, we're leaving. What's going to be said about me? Am I going to be immortalized? Well, truth is, you and I both know that in the way that men count immortality, we're not. And at the risk of sounding morbid, all you have to do is go to a cemetery and walk around and see the dash between two dates. And I know that's going to be me someday. And nobody's going to remember. Nobody on earth anyway. Turn with me, if you will, for just a minute to Matthew 25, please. Because I think this is an encouraging passage, and I think one that's instructive. Matthew 25. A picture of the judgment day, or so it seems. Matthew 25, verse 31, talks about the Lord coming with His holy angels and all nations. Incidentally, that's all nations. That's everybody. Some will be on the right, some will be on the left. The sheep, the goats. Notice what He's going to say in verse 34, or verse 33 beginning, please. I'm in Matthew 25, verse 33. And He will set the sheep on His right hand, but the goats on the left. Then the King will say to those on the right hand, come, you blessed of My Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me food. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you took me in. I was naked, and you clothed me. I was sick and you visited me. I was in prison and you came to me. Then the righteous will answer Him, saying, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you drink? When did we see you a stranger and take you in, or naked and clothe you? Or when did we see you sick or in prison and come to you? And the King will answer and say to them, assuredly I say to you, inasmuch as you did it to one of the least of these My brethren, you did it to Me. I've always been impressed with that. I know they're saying, Lord, when did we do this to You? But still there's humility there too. Lord, what did we do? I remember talking with a woman years ago who had meant a lot to me, my life, my family's life. And I said to her, I want you to know. It was after a service. I said, I want you to know how much you've meant to me through the years. How much I appreciate your good life and the good influence. And she said, well, I don't know anything that I've done. And I said, well, that reminds me of Matthew 25. That's a lot of what they said there, isn't it? Let me tell you what will immortalize you in the mind. Well, in the only mind that matters, and that is God's mind. And that is, if you honor Him. And in the minds of your children, there can be a sense of immortality in that when you go on your way, if your children can sit at your funeral and remember, not a self-centered, not a gossip, not a bitter individual, not a person that was constantly angry that could never say they were wrong, But remember a person who wasn't perfect, but one who asked God to forgive him, asked anybody to forgive them when they did wrong, and trusted in God. Think about that. I've seen families torn all to pieces fighting over money and land, but I have never yet seen a family torn all to pieces as they gather together in memory of mom and dad, loving God, and going to heaven. That's immortality. I want to ask you, what if you could do it all again? To some of you, I may be talking to people that are in their teens. I may be talking to people who are middle-aged. Now, I can still tell you some things that I'd like to do again. I'd like to go back and make some things right. And by that, I mean just erase them from my record. But I can't do that. In fact, think with me about the story of Luke 16, the rich man and Lazarus. And really, what was the rich man wanting? What did he really want? As in torments, he lifted up his eyes. He wants Lazarus to come and to dip just a drop of water on his tongue. And my friends, I don't believe Jesus is just over-dramatizing here to get people's attention. I think he is telling us what it's like and what you're going to feel like if you miss heaven. Just give me a little taste of what it was like. Give me a little of what I had. Do you remember in that story Abraham said to Lazarus, not Lazarus, but the rich man, "Son, remember that when you were in life, you had good things and Lazarus had evil." And when we close our eyes in death, you know what we're going to have? Memories. That's all we're going to have. You can say that's corny. You can laugh at that all you want to. We're going to have memories. Memories of what might have been. Or perhaps memories of a time when you heard the gospel preached. Maybe you were a Christian and you said, "I've not been living right. I'm going to get right." One of the most encouraging things I ever saw happened to me a few years ago, where a man who had been a member of the church for 25 years came to me and in tears made his life right. And he said, "I've been playing church for 25 years. Now I want to be a Christian." And brother and sister, he's been one. He's living like one as best I can tell. And that's what it takes. It's in the game. It's reality. Look around you. Things are changing. Time is passing. It's time to get right. Because you will not have it to do over again. Think of if you lift up your eyes like Lazarus, in a blissful home, all the evil things you experience in this life will absolutely fade away and never be remembered. Wouldn't it be a great thing at the beginning of this meeting to just make your life right? Just be baptized into Christ today to get right while we stand and while we sing.